You're listening to Stephen Maggi, host of one of America's top interview programs, The Stephen Maggi Show.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome. I'm Stephen Maggi. Later in the program, we'll take a look at what it takes to make a perfect sex life. Dr. Douglas Weiss, who's been a guest on the Oprah Winfrey Show and Dr. Phil programs, joins us to tell married couples how to make their sex lives even better. But up first, we will take a look at one of the most popular shows on television in this, the golden age of television drama. If you ever wondered what drives the folks that are in the show The Walking Dead, we all know we love it. We don't know exactly why, but we can't look away. Well, first of all, the series premiere of a new spinoff is coming soon. It's called Fear the Walking Dead, and it premieres just in a few weeks. With us today is Travis Langley. He's a professor of psychology and a regular speaker on the subjects of heroism and pop culture. He's written a really interesting book called The Walking Dead Psychology, Psych of the Living Dead. And Travis, what is it about this show that just gets everybody so excited? I mean, I think to the very beginning where Rick wakes up after a coma to find that he's in this world. Do you think we have a natural fear of waking up and finding some sort of thing like our world's completely upside down?
The fear of waking up. Sometimes maybe it's the part of us that slows down to see the car accident. We live in a complicated, crazy world. Full of scary things and people and dangers. Sometimes it's nice to have the simplicity in a story of something like the zombies, where you know what the threat is. You know, the people are the more complicated part, but dealing with the zombies themselves, you know what the danger is. Yeah, we live in a very complicated world. I don't think it's a coincidence that a third of all zombie movies have come out since 9/11, since the world brought different fears and concerns about, it's like, where is the world going and what is going on? We want to look at these same fears in ourselves, but sometimes we need something to help distance us a little to make it more comfortable to look at the worst things. When I teach forensic psychology, the psychology of crime, I can talk about some of the worst subjects in the world, and some of it is too brutal for people to really process what I'm talking about, but I can talk about the same things, the same psychology, and how it affects people with a fictional example, and they'll listen, and they'll think about it. And we're looking at our world and want to understand what's going on. And you can't watch Ebola Outbreak, the ongoing series, and have fun. You can watch zombies and have fun.
Wow. You know, that's a great point. So it's a kind of a way, and I hadn't thought of it this way, where we take on something like terrorism, which we don't understand, and it's kind of that fear of the unknown. But at the same time, I guess it's the idea that, well, this probably can't happen, that makes it easier to watch.
Now, Max Brooks, author of World War Z, he was answering a question like that one time. And he said, you know, with real tragedy, real horrible things, you know, you watch that and you go to bed and you'll have trouble going to sleep. You know, but you watch zombies, you know, you watch everything falling apart and people struggling to survive and the president's flying over going, that's peculiar, but it's just zombies. So then you can go to sleep.
Well, and I find this really incredible when I think of some of the shows around there, whether it was in some of the really great shows like The Sopranos or
Breaking Bad,
that kind of thing. Is it kind of a mix then of real things into a thing that seems outrageous? So, again, that outrageousness gives us that buffer that, well, it's okay to watch this, we can have fun with this because it's probably not going to happen.
Probably. Yeah, it's only they talk about comic relief in tragedy, you know, to have something to break it up so it's not just crushing you and wearing you down. And with this unreal situation, it already builds in something to help keep us from getting worn down by it.
Yeah, and you know, people are such fans of this. I talk to folks, they can't wait for the next one and so forth. And this whole idea of zombies, you know, what is the appeal of the zombie? I mean, because it was kind of – this came from a comic book, right, originally. Didn't this show actually come from that?
Yes.
So I wouldn't have thought –
I read the comic book.
Okay, well, there you go. Would you have thought when you read that comic book that, hey, this will transfer perfectly over to the screen? Because I would think it would be a little bit harder, or it would make more of a movie. But this is a regular series. It's been on for years, so people can't get enough of it.
Well, I did. I don't know if everybody would think that way, because I always had. George Romero had a very elaborate treatment for his third zombie movie, Day of the Dead, which was so much more ambitious than what wound up on the screen, and so much story. And when I was reading the treatment on that, and the script on it, actually, I was thinking, this would work so much better as like a Showtime TV series. And this TV series now, The Walking Dead, is doing exactly that kind of thing. It is taking this stuff to see not just what happens one night on the farm when the zombies are attacking in Night of the Living Dead, but ongoing survival, the ongoing issue of dealing with people and, you know, not just ending it in one adventure or one horrible night, but what does it take to keep dealing with people and situations on and on? And I think it's doing an amazing job. This particular one is so popular because it is well-written with richly developed characters. And, of course, on the screen, you know, we've got all these actors doing such a wonderful job of bringing the characters to life.
Yeah, and it's part of this what I call the golden age of drama. I think we're seeing it now, I guess, thanks to HBO, and it's gone into AMC, you know, I think, with Mad Men. And this is another show that takes kind of an outlandish concept, but the acting is just so good. That's got to give it a certain credibility as well.
And what you're talking about, this golden age of drama, a lot of truth to that, because they've moved now with all these different forms to tell serialized stories, to tell long form fiction, you know, not just episodic television. I'm a big fan of episodic television. You know, I like the Law and Order story that will be complete and intact without having to worry about the big picture. But these are telling new kinds of stories for that long form.
Yeah, and you know, it's great because it's not like, say, even a movie that can go a couple hours. We want this to keep going on and on, and the idea is, I think we're always kind of wondering what's going to come next, and these writers are so good they can come up with stuff that we can't even imagine.
Yeah, the television has advantage in getting to tell lots of different stories and do the long form in a way the movie can't. I love Star Wars. Love Star Wars. It excites me more than Star Trek, and yet I'll watch more of Star Trek because, well, there is so much more because of doing television.
First of all, when you watch Walking Dead, it's survival at the absolute grittiest point. What does it teach us about that? I mean, is that what do people want to think that that's what's going to happen if they're put into any situation like this where, you know, the tables are turned and it's really a matter of survival, that they're going to be able to go on like this?
Yeah, I mean, you ask the majority of people, it's like, how would you do in that? And most people will say, oh, I would not do well in a situation like that. But you know, a lot of people think they wouldn't do as well in crisis as they really do. We look across the world. You look at how people reacted when 9/11 happened in New York. You look at hurricanes. And, yeah, some people fall apart. Some people turn on others. But the majority of people pull together. The majority of people find strengths they did not know they had.
Yeah, so as a professor of psychology, is this something we can teach to people that go out and work with these folks? Because you know you're going to have kind of, as you say, there's going to be this hero set, these people that really respond well. And as you say, I think it's more people than not fall into that. And then there's also the people that are going to crack. Is that something you can use kind of as an example of how do we deal with a real tragedy or just something that's a crisis, what have you?
Yeah, when I use fiction, like with these characters in The Walking Dead, and who's showing different signs of trauma, and we see things with them we don't see in people in our other lives, but we also get to look for their strengths, and that can help prepare us for looking for strengths in real people.
So now this new series is coming out. People are excited about it. is there anything we're going to see different in the Fear of the Walking Dead than in the original?
Well, Fear the Walking Dead, you get to see what things were like during that first month when Rick was in a coma. We get to see things fall apart. Another big difference, of course, is the location. It's set in L.A. It's not set in rural Georgia. And I have a hard time imagining how the main characters can stay in L.A., you know, when the zombie outbreak's happening.
Yeah, no, and I think we're seeing, you know, we get back to that golden age drama, and we're even seeing it. You know, you mentioned Breaking Bad, and then there's Better Call Saul, and people were just fascinated by seeing what came about, you know, how did he get to where he's at. So this has to be the same kind of thing. There's such a hunger for this, and there's such enjoyment in the series that people want now more background information.
I know. I would love to do a look at Breaking Bad sometime. I hope Better Call Saul does well enough that I'll get to do a Breaking Bad book sometime. I would love to do that. No, we are intrigued in these things. We are fascinated. We wonder. Because there's only so much you can wonder. It's like you don't always want to know the background. Sometimes you want to fantasize about it. A whole lot of characters in The Walking Dead we don't know anything about. I've heard people say, it's like, I hate Sasha. I can't stand Sasha. My thought is, you don't know Sasha. You have no idea what she was like before she was going through this horrible trauma. We don't know what life was like for her. We know she's having a hard time. She's coping as best she can in one of the wide range of things people would do when coping. I think one of the things some people are bothered about Sasha is they might be worried that they would, you know, react like she did and have some of the what seems worst, you know, most cynical come out.
Yeah. You know, and as I'm listening to you and I'm thinking of those, you know, you talked about the great shows and so forth. Is it because the writing and the acting is so good that this intensity comes through? I mean, you saw that whether people wanted to know more and more about Don Draper and what drove him or, you know, certainly, you know, in Breaking Bad or Tony Soprano or any of those people. Is that what it is where this writing drags you in so good and the acting is so good that people just want that, you know, from a psychological standpoint, they want to know as much as they possibly can about these folks?
Yeah, you think about what are they like, where do they come from, why do they do these things, and what could it bring out? And that's why I get to do this with The Walking Dead. You know, there are plenty of things where, you know, I would never let that be a good example for how to talk about psychology. You know, nobody wants to watch, you know, Bonanza, you know, the early years. It's the same stories.
Right.
Well, okay, well, maybe somebody does, but they're not intrigued. Ooh, what did drive them to be Pa and the guys on the Ponderosa? You know, that is goes back to this modern long-form storytelling, different kinds of stories where we are getting into characters in a way we didn't before.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, there was some, you know, great characters for early television. Think like Perry Mason. Great show.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, it's fairly easy to figure out where he's coming from. These people are so complex, and has that just shown how we've changed in terms of what we want for entertainment, where we want complex characters that really fit the guy next door, not necessarily an ideal type guy or a very bad guy that's just a bad guy, that kind of thing. We want these complex characters now?
Well, it's this growing age of communication. We've had several generations watching television now, and we've learned the tropes, we've learned the rhythms of the stories, and with this increasing age of information, instant information, 24/7 on TV and instant information through the internet, and we learn things are complicated. We see heroes and we see heroes fall. It is hard to hang on to heroes and just idealize them when you find out things about them as human beings rather quickly. So this fiction needs to show us complex heroes. For us to be able to buy them as heroes, we've got to see some of their worst qualities, too, and then see, yes, that despite their worst qualities, they're finding the better thing to do. You know, a whole lot of characters on The Walking Dead have more faith in Rick than he has in himself. At a point when he thought he was going to turn Michonne over to the governor, everybody else around him, they had faith that he was not really going to do it.
Travis, we want to follow you online. I know you're all over
Twitter.
The place.
Oh, I love Twitter. Superherologist on Twitter. Or just look Travis Langley. It's easy to find me. That's the easiest place. Or Facebook. I'm easy to find online.
Well, we'll do that. We're going to buy your book. You can buy it right here on our website as well. Thanks for being with us today, Travis. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
When we return, you will meet Dr. Douglas Weiss, a licensed marriage counselor and author of over a dozen relationship books. You are listening to America's Great Conversations on The Stephen Manji Show.
You may not realize it, but there's a source of renewable energy right in your neighborhood, and you're helping to power it. Today, waste management is using the resources at our disposal to create energy from waste. Enough green energy to power over 1 million homes. It's an idea we're proud to drive forward. From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think waste management.
Joining us now is Dr. Douglas Weiss. He's a licensed marriage counselor and author of a bunch of books on relationships. You've seen him on Dr. Phil and the Oprah Winfrey Show. And he's got a book out that I think is really appropriate for this time of year. It's called Five Sex Languages. And Doc, When people think, what do we need to do for sex? Really, sex and language go together in this, right? You have to be able to communicate. That translates into what's called great sex.
Well, if you can communicate, your sex life's going to be a whole lot better.
Well, it makes a lot of sense. Now, you know, what kind of mistakes do we see people make on this? Because, you know, I think in our society, there's so much on, very, you know, whether it's the internet or television or what have you, that people have this idea that, you know, just hot-looking people are going to be able to have all this great sex. It's way, way, way more than that, isn't it?
It's a lot more than that, thankfully so, because some people would be disqualified then, right?
Yeah, right.
You can have great sex, but one of the mistakes people make is that they want to have sex the way they want someone to have sex with them.
Right.
Instead of learning the sex language of their partner and accentuating their pleasure.
You know, a lot of people look at these hookups and so forth, but maybe the problem is they think of marriages and so forth as really dull and boring. But if two people are really, connected together like that, they're really the ones who do, because they know what each other wants, right? I mean, isn't that kind of a thing that's pleasing everybody?
All sex research shows that people that are in long-term marriages, that spiritual women have the highest sexual satisfaction of anyone, because they're really connected emotionally, they're connected spiritually, they're having better sex, they're communicating about what they want with each other, they have time to learn the whole soup of the other person, as opposed to, like, in a one-night stand, okay, you didn't learn much.
Yeah, right, right, exactly.
It takes a while to really learn how to be sexually pleasing to another person. And then what happens over time is that person evolves and changes, and if you're evolving and changing with them and keeping up with that, well, then the sexual pleasure stays heightened, as opposed to, you know, playing soccer one night and playing basketball one night and playing football the third night. You're not good at any of them.
Well, you talk about specifically five different categories of communicating. So what are these? Because people sit there and go, what are you talking about, sexual language and stuff? What do you mean?
Yeah, it's really simple that everyone has a sex language. You might have a primary and secondary, but most people have a primary sex language. When you find out what that is, and in the five sex languages, we talk about the five languages. We could talk about a couple of those if you'd like. But once you learn it, it's kind of like the key in the hole. It, like, takes their sexuality to a whole nother level, because now they're not just being sexual, but they're being sexual in the way and receiving sexuality in the way they were made. And so, like, let's suppose we'll take one of the languages. Let's say fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a mature version and an immature version of every language, because people are mature or they're not mature. And I find, I've been working with people for almost 30 years, and I find that the language can show up either way. But like, if you're a fun sex language, spontaneous is really important to you. Location being buried is probably important. You know, having a different spin on sexuality, whether it's creativity with clothes or places or positions. You know, you want it to be a little more fun. Experimenting's okay. So sex and creativity together means it's a lot bigger high than just, okay, one position, same thing every Tuesday night. So this person, they crave having some fun inside their sexuality. Not necessarily every single encounter, but when that button's hit, their sexuality is a lot more fulfilling. Now, what happens, though, if you do get married, you tend to marry someone with an opposite or a different, I probably should say different sexual language. And so there's one in the book called patience, right?
Yeah.
Now, patience is someone in the kind of the adult form, is someone, they want to make time for sex. No, quickies aren't really that kind of appreciated.
Right.
They want to take time in each phase of sex, the foreplay, the sexual act, the after. They light touch over long time is really appreciated. It's really gentleness is really important to them, taking that time during floor play, even taking their time during the height of the sexual encounter is really important to them. So this person really gets a lot of meaning and significance of you taking your time discovering and pleasuring them. Well, now, put those two people in the same marriage, right?
Right, you got problems, or potentially.
You have potential problems, and that's where, you know, I'm glad we're talking about this, Steve, because it doesn't have to be a problem. But I've worked with couples, and sometimes for 30 or 40 years, it's a problem because she doesn't get me, he doesn't get me, and he's a jerk, and she's not any fun, right?
Right, right.
And then what happens is you start creating this story in your mind about the differences between the two of you instead of just actually working with what you got. I mean, if you got a Ferrari, drive a Ferrari. If you got a Volkswagen, drive a Volkswagen. But find out what you got and drive what you got.
When we return, more with Dr. Douglas Weiss, who's been featured on Dr. Phil and the Oprah Winfrey Show, as well as some top publications such as Cosmopolitan and USA Today. His 25 years as a marriage counselor, in conjunction with his own battles with sex addiction, have led to two films about his expertise. One was Sex, Lies, and Obsession, and the other, Sex Addiction. I hope you're having a wonderful weekend. This is The Stephen Manchi Show.
Check us out on Twitter at twitter.com/Stephen Maggi Show. This is The Stephen Maggi Show.
Waste management has earth-friendly plans that fit the biggest corporations and recycling programs to help smaller companies get started. We're there for you every night and on the job with you every day. When you put waste management to work, you get an environmental partner and big ideas for every size business. From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think waste management. To learn more, visit WM.com.
We just celebrated Valentine's Day, and as always, the one thing at the forefront of couples' minds is sex. The one thing truly necessary to have a great sex life is great communication, and to help couples reach that peak level of communication, Dr. Douglas Weiss is with us. And Dr. Weiss and I were just talking about what to do with couples where each partner has a different sex language. Doc, what do you do?
And so you might, suppose he's the patient one and she's the fun one. Well, with her, she's going to have to sometimes say, you know what, take my time, really go through this, like to do what he wants. I know he kind of likes the same thing. It's kind of boring for me. I'm going to do that because it's really fun for him. But then he compromises sometimes too and says, you know what, really doing it by the fireplace is really kind of a stretch for me. But I'm going to do that for you.
So are we talking about kind of sharing a little bit, like, okay, you know, we're going to compromise? I mean, is that part of this?
And sometimes even make the other person's sex language more important than yours in a sex act. It's okay to do that. And what happens is you're both sending the message to each other that the way you're made is awesome, and I'm going to respect and honor that. I'm going to work with it. And then there's a whole lot of other tips on, like, how not to argue about sex, how to set up sexual agreements in the book, so that couples can really maximize their sexuality. I mean, if you're going to be in a long-term relationship, I mean, if you're going to have a one-night stand, you're not going to maximize your sexuality.
Right. Okay? It's all about you, right?
It's all about you or all about them, and that's what it was. And you're going to forget each other anyway. But if you're going to do the art of sex and you're going to learn how to create a masterpiece with someone over 30, 40, 50 years, well, then you need a different set of tools. And the five sex languages gives them the tools to experiment and give them a paradigm. Like one of the guys who's in my office here, he said, I read your new book, Doug. I've read most of your books. He goes, there's a lot of really good stuff in there. And me and my wife, we're talking about it. This is really helpful, you know, because they're learning how to say, well, this is what I've been trying to say to you.
Well, that's what you want to hear, right? I mean, because that's the whole idea. You're talking about great sex is great communication. Well, you're getting the communication part started by going through this. And, you know, I think the book is important because it helps you decide, wait a minute, let's set the discussion up about X or Y, as opposed to just kind of guessing at what you're supposed to do. That's part of the problem with all this, isn't it, anyway, Doc, where a lot of people, nobody teaches them this, you know.
Right. High school, college, I got 4 degrees, Steve. No one taught me this stuff. Okay, and I work with couples. They fly from all over the country to come see me, sometimes for sexual addiction, sometimes for intimacy anorexia, sometimes just to get a better marriage or a better sex life. And I'm amazed at how often good-hearted, well-meaning, highly educated, intelligent, successful people never talk about sex together.
Yeah.
I mean, they never do. And so the five sex languages gives them a tool. Say, let's read this together. Let's talk about this together. And it opens up some really kind of funny doors. And so they can say, well, that's not really me, but this is really me. Or, you know, we've never really set up our garden. We've always argued about it. Let's just set it up. These are what's really acceptable for us. This is our particular pasta, okay? And maybe we'll throw in something later. We can try it, but we're going to vote on whether we want to try it. We're going to vote on whether we want to keep it in the soup.
Well, I mean, do you find, too, that as they read about these languages, maybe they're thinking, because, again, they grew up, nobody told them, they were in one particular way, this is what they're comfortable with. Well, wait a minute, that sounds kind of interesting. Maybe it's a kind of thing, you know, because we all talk about experimentation, but again, we're usually talking, I'm talking to my buddies, girls are talking to themselves. But when the couple gets together, a lot of times, either from embarrassment or, you know, everybody wants to look cool right now, I know what I'm doing. You know, again, you need that communication because you're never going to get past that door that may be closed and you don't even know why it's closed.
Yeah, and like even if you have a spouse that has a patient love language, if you can have the conversation of, well, can we do something a little different maybe every third time? Well, for the guy or girl who's not getting anything different, 30% difference is a huge upgrade from where they were before.
Right, right.
And they might be enough satisfied with that. Well, that's really fun. I don't need it. Know, different or fun every time, but maybe once every 2 weeks would be great where we actually focus on it being this way. And then they can have the real negotiation. They're both feeling heard because, as you know, if someone doesn't feel heard, the problem stays there. And they can at least be heard, and it gives them the language to not just walk through their sex languages, but gives them real tools to, you know, how to stop arguing about sex.
Well, and you cover also not just the fact of what you like or don't like and so forth, but also this whole thing where, you know, especially like women with a little kid, you know, it's not that they're not into it. They're just tired, right? I mean, it's, you know, you got to be able to deal through that.
I tell guys all the time, I think men should put the kids to bed. It just makes better sense. Because if you give your wife a break and say, listen, I got the kids, I'll put them to bed, and whatever your rituals are for bedtime stuff, great, do those. But when a guy puts the kids to bed, it does not drain his battery.
Right,
no matter what story he does or whatever, because he's thinking, I'm going to get sex, so it doesn't really matter what the next half hour includes. Okay? He goes through it, and he's fine. You take your wife, you put her in there with two or three kids, she comes out exhausted because she's really involved in the story, or if they do prayer together, or if they play a game together, whatever their ritual is together. She's tired. And so if the guy does it, plus if the dad says to the little kid, you stay in bed or die, like the kid believes the dad.
Right,
doesn't
right.
He's the mom, right?
Well, you know, this whole idea of the sex languages, Doc, and part of it is, too, male and female just have, they come from different places, right? I mean, there is a certain part that, you know, comes automatically, and that's how this has to be dealt with, right?
Well, there are some gender differences, but it's not as big as you think. It's really more of a language difference. Because there are some guys who want patience. They want the same thing.
Right.
And there are some ladies who really, they want a little more risk and adventure. And there's some ladies who have higher sex drives than men. And, like, I work with a lot of couples. Like, we talk about the roadblocks in the five sex languages. One of the roadblocks is what we call intimacy anorexia. So if a guy is in intimacy anorexic, he really is avoiding sex with his wife. Like, they haven't had sex in weeks or months or sometimes years. I have a couple in my office right this week. They've not had sex in over a year, and she's dropped dead gorgeous.
Wow. Wow.
Okay, and you're like, what? Yeah. This is intimacy anorexia. The guy had a problem growing up, never dealt with it, and he's anorexic inside his marriage. Good guy at work and neighborhood, but at home, she feels alone in the marriage. And that's one of the roadblocks he would have to take personal responsibility for. So she's over here, you know, really hungry sexually, like maybe an adolescent male would be, because she's being starved.
Wow. You know, this is really interesting stuff, and I think it's important for people to get past, you know, all the myths and stuff, because even as we're talking, Doc, you can see, I mean, we go right away with, you know, we think certain things. It's that kind of behind the back of the school conversation that where we get a lot of these myths. And, you know, when you just break all this stuff, and a book like this helps to do this, right? We're all playing the same thing. And as a married couple, as you say, if you're really committed to each other, that's why they have so much success. And that's why the more you can talk about it, those people have better marriages. And they're just either healthier people. I mean, you know, and boy, if you've got everything working on that end of your job, you know, job's the wrong word, but in your life, it just makes things so much easier, right? Yeah. I mean, it's one thing because people that have these problems, doesn't it affect everything in their life? I mean,
everything. Eventually, no matter where in the marriage there's dysfunction, if it stays dysfunctional, it becomes kind of that squeaky wheel.
Right.
All of a sudden, even though you're a multimillionaire, you're not happy, you know, because your husband doesn't want to have sex with you, or your wife doesn't want to have sex with you. You know, that feels very personal.
Yeah.
And it starts to ache the whole system. And so you're right. When the sex life is good, it helps. It just brings a fluidness to the relationship and acceptance and a love and appreciation and respect for each other that gives some fuel to solve the other problems that might come up, you know, in parenting or finances or just dealing with, you know, whatever's going on in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
It also just makes you feel loved. You know, when you just feel like, hey, my spouse gets me, and I know this isn't their favorite, you know, type of thing to do, but they do that for me once in a while, and it's just like, it just rocks my world, you know?
Well, you know what's great, too, Doc? In the book, you know, people look at this and say, hey, you know what? This is all great stuff, and yeah, that all makes sense, but in my marriage is not going to work. Well, you actually have a solution to that. I want you to talk just for a minute about that, this idea of a sex contract with, not ingredients, but agreements.
Yeah.
So tell us a little about what that is and what people can do.
Yeah, and a gradient is basically, I mean, there's two parts of it. There's one, deciding on kind of what you want in your particular sexual agreement. These are what we're comfortable with. This is what we're willing to do or not do. And just being honest about it. I've had couples argue for 30, 40, 50 years about, you know, this person won't do this. Well, they're probably not going to do that. So give it up.
Right.
Give it up 25 years ago. Okay? If there's no banana in your garden, there's no banana in your garden. Get over it. Okay?
Yeah, makes sense.
So that's just the way it is.
When we return, we will continue to discuss Dr. Douglas Weiss's new book, Five Sex Languages. The book breaks down the five different categories of communicating sexually that hold true for most couples. You're listening to The Stephen Maggi Show.
You're listening to Stephen Maggi, host of one of America's top interview programs, The Stephen Maggi Show.
Forgotten Heroes, the independent film that Hollywood refused to distribute.
They were asked to risk their lives in order to save their enemy.
The producers of Forgotten Heroes are donating 25% of all sales to the American Veterans Disabled for Life Memorial Fund.
We need someone to go in there and bring them out.
NBA coming this way!
From first-time director Jack Marino, the home run for America's Vietnam veteran.
They are Forgotten Heroes.
Buy the DVD now at ForgottenHeroesTheMovie.com. That's ForgottenHeroesTheMovie.com.
Are you paying cash for prescription medications? Then our free pharmacy discount card is for you. You can save up to 85% off prescription medications at over 65,000 pharmacies in the U.S., including all major chains. Everyone qualifies. The cards are activated and they never expire. To get your free pharmacy discount card today, call 888-650-3051. Again, 888-650-3051.
As you may already know, trees do more than beautify our world. They help clean the air of carbon dioxide, a major greenhouse gas. As North America's largest recycler, last year alone, Waste Management recycled enough paper to save over 41 million trees. How's that for thinking green? From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think Waste Management.
We are back with Dr. Douglas Weiss, author of the new book, Five Sex Languages. Dr. Weiss is the clinical director of the Heart to Heart Counseling Center in Colorado Springs and the president of the American Association for Sexual Addiction Therapy. He's a licensed psychologist and author of more than 30 books on addiction and relationships. We were just talking about dealing with couples who look at sex differently. The doctor suggests a sex contract with agreements.
But the other part of what you're talking about is really powerful, because so many couples argue about the frequency of sexuality. For decades, okay, one person, and again, it may be the woman, has a higher sex drive than the other person. And oftentimes it is the man. And so, but the reason she doesn't have a high sex drive isn't because she doesn't have enough testosterone or she's not healthy sexually. Oftentimes it's because of another thing we talk about in the book, which is he's not emotionally connecting to her, nurturing her. He's not sharing his feelings and he's not praising a woman. Most women will have lower sexual desire if they don't feel emotionally close and nurtured. If you are praising her and you are sharing your heart with her, that makes her sexually crazy. Most guys don't get that, Steve. It takes me a 2x4 to get guys to figure this out. I say, here, just go do this feelings exercise. It's in the book. Praise her twice a day, two feelings a day. Do that for 90 days and see what happens to her sexual desire.
Yeah, what great advice.
One of those guys have come back and said I was wrong.
Wow.
But going back to what you asked me, because I'm not ADD. It's a good thing a psychologist is not ADD.
Yeah, we don't do it right.
Oh, let's talk about this. Right. So, but going back to the ingredients, you actually set up a sexual agreement where you say, you know what, this is kind of our sexual appetites. Mutually, we can put this together. Maybe she wants four, he wants two. Okay, we negotiate a three. Or on her, we give her four. On his, we give two, however you negotiate it.
Right.
But at least you're talking about it and you're agreeing about it. And then what you do is just set up a way to manage it, whether you rotate weeks, rotate days, split the week in half, just pick days for some couples because they've got, you know, kids going in four directions and they've got their own commitments and work. And maybe Tuesday and Saturday is the only night they can get it done. Okay, well, get it done. And then there's also the third piece, which you set up a consequence if someone doesn't ask when it's their turn or they say no for non-medical reasons.
Right.
And that way, sex is not about controlling the other person. It's not about performing. Like, you didn't do dishes tonight, so I'm not having sex with you. It's not about that. When you walk down the aisle or if you're in a very committed relationship, you know sex is part of that relationship. And so keeping your words really, really important.
Yeah.
Trying to have some kind of communication. You know, you and I are guys, and so we have like what we call food anxiety. Like, if I don't know what I'm going to eat, matter of fact, right now my staff is feeding up my lunch so that when I'm done, I get to eat. Because I have some food anxiety. If I don't know what I'm going to eat, man, I start getting more and more anxious about food, right?
Right.
All guys are like that. Get past 3 or 4 hours, they want to know where the food's coming.
Right.
Well, the same thing is for sex. If a man does not know when sex is going to happen or have a general idea, he stays sexually anxious all the time. And so he's much more likely to be pouncing and fondling and trying to find out if tonight's his lucky night because you have given him no information. The sexual agreement solves that problem. Now, women, Steve, have what we call the reverse sexual anxiety. They'd like to know when sex is not going to happen. Okay?
Yeah.
They would like to know that back rub is really a back rub. It's not a prelude.
Right, okay? Right.
And they'd like to know that you did the dishes and put the kids to bed because you're just in love with her. And you want her to have a good night's sleep, not because you, like, need to get something. And so the sexual agreement, if it's her turn, she knows, well, tonight's not tonight because I'm not picking tonight. I'm picking tomorrow night.
This is
she
all great
enjoy
stuff.
The non, or even sexual touch and play, but it doesn't have to lead to sex.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, yeah, you just enjoy me. That's fine. I'm looking forward to having sex with you tomorrow, but you can still touch me. That's great.
No, this is great stuff. My last question, though, Doc, is, okay, so if somebody, you know, either one or both people just will not go for this, no, it's not right, it's right, it really means there's other problems beyond this then, right? I mean, because this makes all the sense in the world, and if people are coming to you and saying, hey, we want to fix this thing, this is just logical. So therefore, do you find some things where the problem is actually much deeper and they're using this as the cause when it's much more?
Yeah, sometimes it's bad sexuality is a symptom. I mean, we talk about the roadblocks. We talk about sometimes it's a sexual addiction. You know, the man or woman is doing things outside the marriage or doing porn to the degree where it's really affecting them. Sometimes it's sexual abuse that's not dealt with. We talked about intimacy and anorexia earlier. Those are the major three. But, like, if something has someone that's not dealt with, that's hard. You know, like, if the guy's had an affair 5 years ago and she's not really dealt with it and she doesn't trust him, well, have him take a polygraph, verify he's been clean for the last 5 years. And that's been miraculous for some women. You'll think,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh, he's really the guy he says he is now. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay? And so so sometimes there's trauma that needs to be dealt with, but you clean that up. And in there I walk through some of the major roadblocks I've seen with couples for over almost 30 years. And they're successful. I mean, I've had couples who, I'll never forget this one couple. They were from Texas, and, you know, he was successful, she was successful. They both wanted sex 2 or 3 times a week, but they were having sex about every 8 to 12 weeks.
Yeah.
And they were both frustrated. Well, they both thought the other person was supposed to ask.
There you go. Yeah.
That's simple, right?
Yeah.
So I taught them how to both ask, and we set up their agreement, and they've been having sex 2 or 3 times a week ever since.
I think this book is going to fascinate folks. It's really a good read, even if you think you have the perfect sex life. I think it's worth a good read. It's worth a look. You'll, if nothing else, you'll figure out why you have such a great sex life. It's called 5 Sex Languages. And Dr. Weiss, where can we follow you online and so forth? We want to see what you're writing and stuff.
Well, they go to drdougweiss.com or for 5sexlanguages.com, just either the word 5 or the number 5. Or and we have a free app for marriages, so if they go to our website, there's a free app for them. And stuff like that. They want to call the office, 719-278-3708. And we want everyone to have a great sex life.
Nope, that sounds great. And they've got you've given them all the tools. Well, thanks so much for being with us. I'd love to have you on again and talk more about this.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Have an awesome day.
We will be back with more in just a moment. You are listening to The Steve and Maggie Show.
You'd never suspect that you could find natural beauty as part of a working landfill. You can. Today, waste management landfills provide more than 17,000 acres of protected land for wildlife habitats. Working closely with communities and the Wildlife Habitat Council, we can ensure there will be protected space for native animal and plant life to thrive. From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think waste management.
Thanks for joining me today. Please visit StephenMaggiShow.com to listen to all of our recent interviews with fascinating folks. That's Stephen with a V, M-A-G-G-I, show, nobreaks.com. You are listening to The Stephen Maggi Show.
Have a suggestion for a future program? Email us at info@StephenMaggiShow.com. This is The Stephen Maggi Show.